to Scuderia F1, the podcast that's always up to speed with the latest Formula One news. Follow us on Twitter at Scuderia F1 Pod and subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher. Now, here are your hosts, Mark Daly and Kevin Laramie.
Hey everybody, what is up? Welcome to the podcast that is always up to speed with Formula One here on the Overtime Media Network. Mark Daly here, all alone in the studio this week. Tonight was a Montreal Impact game night, so that means that Kevin is out on assignment, but there is a lot of Formula One news to talk about, so we're going to keep busy here. And yeah, like I say, there is a lot going on. It's typically a quieter time of year, what with F1 taking its annual summer break for several weeks, and we don't go racing again until the Belgian Grand Prix on the 1st of September, so that's still a couple of weeks out. But nonetheless, I'm sure that at least behind the scenes in the offices and factories for all the Formula One teams, there are lots of people working very hard to get back to racing in a couple of weeks. And there has been a fair amount of news filtering out, so we'll talk about that. And it's nice to have something to talk about, to be quite honest. Usually I found in previous years that when you get into the summer break, it can be really, really quiet. And this year we haven't even really had too much of a silly season. The driver silly season in the driver's market, I guess, with last year so many guys switching teams and moving around, that this year there were not as many contracts coming up for renewal or running out. So the silly season has been extra silly this year with by virtue of not being actually very silly at all. But fortunately, we have other things to talk about, and we're going to be a little bit more serious than that. But we are going to start at least talking about drivers in this sense, not so much about who's moving where. We actually have a confirmation of a driver change, and this is not really too much of a surprise, but maybe it is. I mean, it involves Red Bull, who have a history now of pulling the trigger and making a mid-season change. They did it back in 2016, demoting Danny Kvyat back to Toro Rosso and then promoting Max Verstappen, which in hindsight, obviously turned out to be a no-brainer. And Max has gone on to do some phenomenal things in Formula One, and certainly looks like he's got what it takes to be potentially a world champion at some point. But anyways, the news this week was confirmed that Alexander Albon will replace Pierre Gasly in the Red Bull team from the Belgian Grand Prix for the remainder of the season. So obviously, it has not gone well for Pierre Gasly so far this year. He had, I thought, a very good year in Toro Rosso last year. He really had an impressive outing the entire weekend at Bahrain. And then they struggled a little bit, but I think a lot of Toro Rosso's season and maybe the lack of success and results last year was due to the fact that they basically became a test bed for the Honda engine, helped do a lot of development with the power unit before they went into the back of the Red Bull cars for this year. So you have to take it with a bit of a pinch of salt. However, it is interesting to see that not even a year later that Gasly, who, like I say, has had some decent time in Formula One so far, really got off to the wrong foot in his Red Bull career with the senior team, at any rate, crashing the car in winter testing at Barcelona, which really messed up their test schedule and really handcuffed them to a certain degree. But really a big difference. You look at the world championship right now. Of course, it's Lewis Hamilton miles ahead of everyone, including his own teammate, but quietly Max Verstappen has moved up to through the order and currently sits now third in the Drivers' Championship with 181 points. And then you look, obviously, as it's been for many years now, the top six drivers come from the top three teams, and it's usually two Mercedes drivers followed by the mix of Ferrari and Red Bull drivers, and this year is no exception. But Pierre Gasly, 63 points, over 100 points behind his teammate, is really a huge gap. And if you look in the World Championship now, that means that Max and Pierre Gasly combined for a total of 244 points through the first dozen races of the year. And if you look a little bit further up the Constructors' Championship, you see that Ferrari have 288 points. So it's a bit of a no-brainer to think that if Pierre Gasly was able to deliver more and score more points, finish better over the course of the opening half of the season, that it doesn't really take too much of an imagination to think that they could be a lot higher up in the the Constructors' Championship and probably have a legit feeling or claim to think that they should be ahead of Ferrari, and the way that Ferrari have just really lacked pace, and we really saw it earlier in the year at Barcelona. I think that was the first real indication that with Red Bull and with the Honda power, that that they were at least equal, if not better than Ferrari, and they certainly have gone on to prove that, at least with Max Verstappen. So it really puts Red Bull, I think, into an interesting situation now. And I'd sort of been pondering this over the past little while. I mean, there were some of the comments leaking out here and there that Mark Owen Horner basically saying that Gasly wasn't going to go anywhere for the rest of the year. And we all know in pro sports that whenever a manager or a player or a coach or whoever gets that vote of confidence whenever they're struggling, it always seems to turn out to be a bit of a kiss of death. And it always, well, at least maybe I'm oversimplifying it, but more often than not, at least in some of the examples I can think of, that it tends to end poorly. And it's a little bit disappointing, obviously, for Gasly, but he started off a little bit rough. You look at the Australian Grand Prix in Melbourne back in March. Max finished third. He finished 11. I mean, he's only retired twice. Once was in Azerbaijan, and the other was other retirement was at the German Grand Prix a couple of weeks ago. He was classified 14th because he almost made it to the very end of the race before he was ironically retired due to a collision he had with Alex Albon, of all people. But, I mean, when he's finished, he has been in points all the other times, with the exception of Australia. But you look there, 8th, 6th, 5th, 8th, 10th, 7th, and in recent times in Great Britain and Hungary, managed to get a 5th and a 6th. So not really what you would expect, because the Red Bull, I think, has really impressed me this year. I mean, it was always going to be a huge, huge gamble when they switched from Renault to Honda power for this year, and Honda always had made that claim that in this first year of the partnership, they wanted to provide them with a power unit that was going to at least keep them on a similar performance or in a similar level as they were with Renault last year. And I think that within the first couple of races, looking at Max Verstappen, that appeared to be slow. Or so, and slowly but surely, they've managed to pull their way up. I mean, Max, through the first dozen races, 2 wins, a second, a couple of thirds, and the rest are 4th and 5th. So I think that, if anything, that is an accurate take on the situation, because Red Bull is still, through the years, despite not having the advantage with Renault in the V6 turbo hybrid era that they enjoyed in the normally aspirated before 2014. We're still good to get a couple of race wins here and there every season. That usually came down a little bit more to circumstance, what happened on race day, rather than outright performance. But I mean, they've always been, I find, more often than not, spot on with their tactics and their strategies, and always doing some bold things to double stack cars and pit stops under safety cars, and at other times if they can get an advantage out of it. Of course, there's been a couple of situations where they have been the best car. Monaco last year was one of those, and that's why it was disappointing for Verstappen when he crashed out in at the end of FP3, ended up missing out on qualifying because they had they were better than anyone else around the track on that day. And of course, that led to that memorable race where Danny Ricciardo managed to basically lead the entire field home despite struggling with engine problems. And well, there's been all sorts of discussion and criticism had about that being a very boring race, but anyways, that's a different discussion. But anyways, that, and then Mexico last year were one of those rare occasions where they were better than anyone else. And it is, I think, good to see that, at least from my perspective, that I think they are on that same level with Honda power than they were with Red Bull. But I beg your pardon, with Renault Power, but to me, I think that that's even now, and even maybe after the first four or five races of the year, I think that it's fair to say that they were a little bit further ahead than they were with Renault Power. But that's my take. But again, like I say, I think with Albon, it's very much a try before you buy, because now they do have the benefit of knowing who's who and what's what and who's capable of what. And obviously Max is the one, there's no variable with Max. We know what he's capable of, and we know that this guy's a race winner, and he's one of the best drivers in the current class of guys in the Formula One. And if you look also with Danny Kvyat, yeah, sure, he's got a bit of a checkered past with the team. It didn't end too well with him the last time he got promoted from Toro Rosso into Red Bull, and obviously got bumped back down only after several races. Most memorably, I think, was I guess this after the second time he drove into Sebastian Vettel at the Russian Grand Prix at Sochi that year. And it was, you know, one of those situations. I mean, it looked that he was obviously struggling, stuck around for another year with Toro Rosso, and then last year was a simulator and reserve driver at Ferrari, so basically sat a year out on the sidelines. And then gets back into the Red Bull team or into the Red Bull system this year with a little bit of luck on his side, because strangely enough, for a team that develops drivers and has all the resources of Red Bull, they didn't have any other guys in the system that had enough points to actually get their super license. So, you know, that's worked out for Danny Kvyat, and I think he's done pretty good so far this year. If you look at the Constructors Championship, Toro Rosso currently fifth in the World Championship with 43 points. That puts them 4 points ahead of Renault in sixth, and Renault's a completely different sad story. And they're quite a ways behind McLaren and Renault, but that is another good story in a different sense. But I think Kvyat's done pretty good. I mean, he's had a couple retirements. He's had a number of top 10 finishes, five by my count, and then he even managed a third place at the German Grand Prix. Of course, that was complete luck when you look at it with the conditions in the torrential rain at Hockenheim, and a lot of the other guys that went off the track and really kind of set it up for one of these unusual results. I think it was only the second time that Toro Rosso had ever scored a podium in their history, which made it even that much better. But anyways, I think that Kvyat has been a good value for money. 27 points, ninth in the World Championship. I mean, he's only a couple of points behind Kimi Raikkonen, who has 31 points. And they really are in that second tier of drivers. A third tier. I mean, in 1 through 5, you have your Hamiltons, Bottas's, Verstappen's, Vettel's, Leclerc, and guys like that. And then you have Pierre Gasly and Carlos Sainz, who have about 60 points each, roughly. And then you have everyone else. And then that starts off with Kimi Raikkonen at Alfa Romeo with 31 points. So Danny Kvyat with 27, and that's not too bad. I think that's quite respectable, considering where he is, and he's quite a bit ahead of his teammate Alex Albon, who at this point only has 16 points, but he's only retired once, and that was at the Canadian Grand Prix. And Alex has managed 5 top 10 finishes so far, and his best result was 6th at the German Grand Prix. But now that they know what they have or what they didn't have with Gasly, and they know what they have with Kvyat, because to me that kind of seemed like a bit of a logical choice would be to move Danny Kvyat up into the car to race alongside Max Verstappen for the rest of the year. But obviously they're looking further afield, further down the road, and it's going to basically be an extended tryout for Alexander Albon and see what he can do in the remaining 9 races of the season. And then from there they'll make a decision and see who will partner Max Verstappen at Red Bull for 2020. So I think it's a good move in a way. I mean, it's obviously very harsh and disappointing on Pierre Gasly, but there have been these talks of things before. I mean, you look at Toro Rosso last year with Brendan Hartley. I mean, he struggled almost the entire year. And there were stories and rumors going around that he might not survive the season. And there was even some talk, I was think it was even back in May or June of last year, with Franz Tost inquiring or trying to find out if perhaps they could sign Lando Norris on loan, which is kind of a strange situation. You don't really see that too much in Formula One, although we did see it with Carlos Sainz and the whole Renault, Honda, and Red Bull and situation there when that all changed with McLaren and Honda parting ways. He got loaned out at Renault for a year or whatever it was, but that was at least the idea or the desire to get Lando Norris in at Toro Rosso last year was pushed away by Zach Brown over at McLaren there. But it just proves that Red Bull, be it either the senior team or the feeder team of Toro Rosso, I think it's pretty obvious if they feel that they can make a change, if it'll benefit the team one way or another, that they're not afraid to make it and just do it and pull the trigger. Harsh for Pierre Gasly, but a great opportunity for Alexander Albon. And I see we're coming up on our first break here, so we're just going to pause very briefly for a quick messages from our sponsors. So please don't go away. We'll be back in just a moment. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time, or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, welcome back. So we're going to stick with the drivers here as we move along in the program this week. And we're going to talk a little bit now about Mercedes and Valtteri Bottas, who says that he has a plan B and a plan C in place in case Mercedes decides to choose Esteban Ocon and replace him at Mercedes for next season. And 2018 for Valtteri Bottas obviously was a very disappointing and frustrating season for him. I think it was completely underlined in a couple of situations. One was the infamous comment Toto Wolff made after the Hungarian Grand Prix that Bottas was the ideal wingman for Lewis Hamilton. Might have been a bit of a slip of the tongue, and then intentional or not. And then also at the Russian Grand Prix when he was leading the race, and typically Valtteri has always gone very well at Sochi, and he was told to move over and let Lewis Hamilton take the lead so he could go for the race win and consolidate and solidify his place at the top of the Formula One standing. So you go away from 2018, you get the off season, and then you come back this year for the first round at Australia and Melbourne. And of the first four races of the year, it's Valtteri Bottas and Lewis Hamilton splitting those races 50-50. Bottas won in Australia. Lewis Hamilton won back-to-back in Bahrain and China. And then Bottas won again in Azerbaijan. And then that was after that, that was the basic basically the start of a real impressive run for Lewis Hamilton, where he won six out of the next eight races, including Spain, Monaco, Canada, France, not Austria, that was where Max Verstappen won. He won, obviously, in Austria and Germany. Lewis winning the other two in Great Britain, and then just the other week in Hungary. And Bottas has really dropped off from that point of view. I think it was a good way to start the season for him, but Lewis has just been driving at another level this year. And before the season, Toto Wolff said that if Bottas was going to stay at Mercedes beyond this year, because I believe that they have an option on his contract, which they could decide to either pick up or not pick up after the end of this year, whatever the case may be, that he would have to drive at a level at least of that of Lewis Hamilton. I mean, like, talk about putting the pressure on a guy. I mean, you're talking about a guy. I mean, Bottas is obviously a very good Formula One driver. Whether or not he is a world champion material, that's obviously a point that's up for debate. I mean, he's obviously capable of winning races. But when you're in the team with Lewis Hamilton, I mean, let's face it, the combination of Lewis Hamilton and Mercedes is pretty much unbeatable within the team. And that's why I think it's amazing that that Nico Rosberg actually was able to win the world championship back in 2016. And even though Lewis came very close and pushed him down the stretch, if his car hadn't blown up at the Malaysian Grand Prix, I think it could have ended very, very differently. I think that he definitely had the momentum and the form later in that season that if he all he needed was that result from one extra race and to go out because of an engine failure like he did in Malaysia, really put the advantage in the court for Rosberg that year, and just made it all that more difficult for Hamilton. But I mean, Bottas, I think, has done a good job, and I mean, it's been pretty amicable, pretty friendly between the two guys. And every once in a while, you kind of see Lewis, that really competitive side of him, that he doesn't like to lose to anyone. I mean, I don't think that's an unfair comment to make about Lewis Hamilton. He likes being number one, and he doesn't like it when he's losing. And I think that that even goes for losing to the guy that that shares the garage with him in the second Mercedes car. And we know that relationship that he had with Nico Rosberg for those several years was just downright toxic. I mean, the two of them had a number of comings together in Austria, in Spain, at Spa. I mean, there's several high profile incidents that went on. I mean, it even came to the point where Mercedes came out and said that that they would go as far to terminate any contracts of one or both of those drivers if things continued that way. And it's never even gotten close to that level of animosity. I mean, it hasn't gotten you know, there's no bad feelings by any means, as far as I can tell from my point of view here. The thing is that, especially after Azerbaijan, when it was pretty much it was level at that point, they both won a pair of races each. That Lewis comes out saying that, you know, he's got to race Valtteri in a different way, and he doesn't need maybe he's not going to be as easygoing on him in certain situations. So you started to see it happening, but after that, Bottas's form dipped, and Lewis got on this phenomenal run. I mean, 62 points ahead of Bottas now in the world championship. And let's be honest right now. I mean, if you're a fan of Lewis Hamilton, by all means, go out and pre-order that world championship number six souvenir gear wherever it's available. I know it's not available just yet, but he's not going to throw it away at this point. It's not going to happen. He's just too good. Lewis Hamilton is just too good. The Mercedes, just too good. It's just too fast, too reliable, and I can't see any circumstance that that would cause Lewis Hamilton and Mercedes to throw that away. They're going to be world champions again in the drivers and in the constructors' world championship. It's just a foregone conclusion now, because Ferrari have faltered big time, and Red Bull have stepped up to a certain degree, but they're still nowhere close to challenging Mercedes each and every weekend. I think that when we get to Belgium and then go on to Monza in Italy, that you get a couple of tracks like that where it's basically flat out for good portions of the laps, I think that we're going to see Mercedes really fly away. Although it'll be interesting because Ferrari, with you know, they are extremely fast in straight line speed, might have something to say about that. But you know, with the low downforce model they have, they do tend to struggle through the more technical, grippier, windy and twisty sections of the track. But I digress a little bit. But Valtteri Bottas, I think, really needs to make a case for himself here. And Toto Wolff has said that it's not going to be based on any one result this year. I mean, he crashed out of the race in Germany a couple of weeks ago in the rain. But interesting enough, it was Lewis Hamilton that crashed out of that race twice. Once at the just coming out of the stadium section into the start finish, he went off in the gravel, but so did Charles Leclerc, so did Nico Hülkenberg. Every whole bunch of guys went off, and of course got onto that very slippery drag strip there, and that caused all sorts of misery. But both Hamilton and Bottas went off in turn one. The big difference was Bottas wasn't able to get going again, whereas Lewis was, and ended up finishing that race in ninth, I believe. But again, in Hungary, Bottas didn't finish all that well, but he tangled with Charles Leclerc early in the race, ended up having to go in very early on to replace tires and his front wing, and then he was right at the very back of the running order very early in the race. And managed to get his or work his way back up to eighth by the time it was all said and done. And yeah, obviously that's disappointing if you're Valtteri Bottas. But you know, I mean, it was a case that I guess it depends which side you bring you're approaching it from. That either was an overly aggressive move from Charles Leclerc that resulted in Valtteri damaging the end plate of his front wing on the right hand side, or he should have backed off because Charles was that was his corner. Whatever the you know, whatever your point of view is, I mean, there's obviously good reason to have that discussion, but. I mean, when he hasn't been struggling with mechanical issues, he's been on the podium every single race except for the Canadian Grand Prix when he finished fourth. And that was the one race where he was kind of really... He wasn't really quite there in terms of pace as anyone else, and he finished fourth. He finished third in Monaco, and that one, that was a bit puzzling too. He didn't really have the pace there either. Monaco and Canada really kind of stand out for me for races where Bottas wasn't quite on it for whatever reason. I mean, he got third in that one only because Max Verstappen had that 5-second time penalty to serve because of the unsafe release where he collided, ironically, or at least came out and squeezed Valtteri between his car and the Armco barrier in the pit straight there. But he really does have to step it up from here and really make a case for himself over the last nine races, whether or not he has what it takes to start winning races and beating Lewis Hamilton. That's a great question, and we'll see in short order whether or not he's got it in him, because if you look at Esteban Ocon, I mean, he's obviously a young, talented guy, and he should be in a race seat in Formula One this year. And when the musical chairs stopped last year, he was out at Racing Point, and that was obviously more to do with the fact that that Sergio Perez brings literally a boatload of money and sponsorship to the team. And then Lance Stroll, well, his dad Lawrence and his consortium of investors bought the team when they were struggling last year and took over from, you know, because Vijay Mallya was having all these legal problems and the team went into receivership. So they saved the team, but then, of course, made a kind of a convenient landing spot for Lance. And Esteban was the one guy that was just out of luck. And, well, I mean, there was possibilities to maybe go to Williams because they're a Mercedes team. But at the end of the day, would that have been beneficial for him at all? Probably not. But you have to think that they are looking at him. But I mean, Bottas, I mean, he's done a good job. Like I say, apart from Canada and Hungary, he's been in the top four, and out of all of those other races, he's only been off of the podium once. So I mean, he's 62 points behind Lewis Hamilton in the drivers' championship. 250 compared to 188 for Valtteri. But on the constructors' side, Mercedes are running away with it, 438 points, and that means a lot to Mercedes. I mean, we've seen every year when they win it, just how much celebration and just how much joy there is in that team when they win. And it seems to me, my observation is that winning doesn't seem to get old for the people at Mercedes. They seem to enjoy it and relish it each and every year when it's happened. So I think from that point of view, he's delivered. But also, and this is just my own two cents, this is my own take, that I think that he's keeping Lewis Hamilton comfortable, because, you know, Lewis is winning more races. And I think that even though he's not winning races, he's still doing what he needs to do in terms of usually scoring a decent amount of points each and every race, either helping out in a 1-2 finish, at least finishing on the podium to deliver all the points they need for the constructors. But on the other hand, by not winning more races and being just at arm's length in the drivers' championship, means that they don't have to worry about the situation deteriorating between Lewis Hamilton and Valtteri Bottas, much like it did between Lewis Hamilton and Nico Rosberg. But you know, you have to think that the Bottas is going to want to do the best that he can and win as many races as he can, because these opportunities to race for a team like Mercedes don't come along very often. And obviously they don't come along to very many drivers. So it would be a shame from his point of view if he can't get it done. But if he can't get it done, and they do decide to say put Esteban and Ocon into that car either this year, or sorry, next year, or the year after, if they decide to pick up Bottas's contract, or Ocon lands somewhere else for next year, I mean, which is a possibility. The big question is that would Ocon be a better driver? Would he be able to do more than Valtteri Bottas has been able to do over the past couple of years? So certainly a situation to watch. Anyways, time for another break here, and we'll be back after this brief word from our sponsors. So don't go away. We'll be back in just one moment. All right, welcome back to the show. So let's move on and talk about McLaren. And I enjoy talking about McLaren this these days, after all these years where it seems they've just sunk lower and deeper and hit rock bottom. It certainly has been nice over the past several months to be talking about them in a more positive light, and see that they are finally, I wouldn't say having a renaissance, but they're definitely on the rise and starting to get back to where they should be. I mean, currently fourth in the world championship with 82 points, quite a ways ahead of Toro Rosso, who are in fifth with 43. But even more importantly, they have more than double the points in the Constructors' Championship than Renault. So obviously, McLaren be a Renault customer team, that is quite something to say and hang their hat on. I mean, Renault, that's a completely different topic that we can talk about another time. I mean, they only have 39 points, so quite a ways down. But slowly but surely, despite all the embarrassment and the frustration and all the tears from the failed experiment that they had with Honda for those several seasons is now long behind them. And it would be kind of interesting to be a fly in the wall, or maybe get into in the mind of Zach Brown and maybe some of the other key players at McLaren to think or get their thoughts on what Honda's doing with Red Bull this season, and the fact that they've got a couple of wins. Because I thought, based just on the history that Honda and McLaren had together, that it was going to be almost a foregone conclusion that they were going to win races together. obviously Honda came back into the game quite far behind and lagging behind in the development of their turbo hybrid engines. So that was a real detriment and really difficult. And I mean, it was tough to watch them struggle. But now that they've had Renault engines for the past year or two, they really have slowly but surely. Started to claw their way back up. I mean, you look at Carlos Sainz this year, and I thought it was an interesting combination to go with a fairly young drivers lineup for this year, Carlos Sainz and Lando Norris. But Carlos has been in the points more often than not this year. He only had he retired twice right off of the bat in Australia, and then late in the race in Bahrain, but although he was still classified as 19th. But since then he only had two finishes in the success of 10 races where he was outside of the points. And so I mean, eight of those results obviously were in the points. I mean, and the last three races going back to Great Britain, he had a sixth and two fifth place finishes in Germany and Hungary. So very, very good stuff to see. And then also Lando Norris, despite having four retirements himself so far this season, has had five top 10 finishes. His best finish so far this year has been six. He's done that twice. And I think Lando is really proving that that he is a talent. And you can see why Zach Brown was reluctant and flat out refused to even consider the possibility of letting him go to Toro Rosso last year, even if that was only on a temporary basis. So it's really good to see that they are moving up through the pack again. And they've said now that they want to have the gap to the top three teams in 2020. And their restructuring is finally complete now that they have team boss Andreas Seidel there and James Key there as technical director. And so now the focus that the team has is to make sure that they're carrying forward with the momentum that they have and try and close the gap that they have currently between them and Mercedes, Red Bull, and Ferrari. So they still have a ways to go before they can be mixing up with those teams on a regular basis and on the same level. But, you know, honestly, guys, I would not be at all surprised to see them back up there. Maybe not sooner, but I definitely expect them to see them up there again, challenging and fighting with those teams in certain circumstances. And I think slowly they have put the right people in place there. And I think that Zach Brown should be congratulated and noted for the work that he's done to take his time and do what was needed and get the right people there. Because it's one thing to have all sorts of money and have all sorts of people on staff there. I mean, you can just go and hire anyone you want, basically. But it's another thing to get the right people in the right place and let them get about their business. So it is a good situation to see, and they're going to have to be able to make up about a second or a second and a half a lap to be able to catch those top three teams. So that certainly seems like a very tall order, but if they can take a chunk out of that again next year, I think that would be a really, really good improvement for McLaren, and it would be fun to watch to see them do that. Because if they're able to close that gap again, and then you get a wet race or maybe a race with some safety car incidents in it or something like that, you know, it would be possible for them to win a race. I mean, sure, that's a little bit different than say maybe winning it outright, but hey, I mean, when it comes down to it, doesn't really matter how you cross the finishing line. Once you get to the checkered flag, all it really matters is that you're the first car across the line. But I think that it is a goal that is achievable, and we'll have to see whether or not they can do it over the next little while. So moving along now, Formula One and the FIA has agreed with the teams that time penalties for unsafe pit stop releases will be handed out even if the drivers gain no competitive advantage. And we've seen that a number of times this year, and it seems more often than not that you see either during qualifying, during the race itself, that you do see cars fly out of their garage or out of their pit box when there's already another car coming down the pit lane. And we saw that Ferrari was given a fine at the German Grand Prix when Charles Leclerc was launched out in front of Romain Grosjean in the Haas, and who really had to like lay on the brakes to avoid a collision, and he lost positions on the track because of that. So when you look at it, I mean, it is obviously first and foremost a safety thing. When you look at the pit lanes that we have around the different tracks in Formula One, there is not a lot of room to work in. And when you think that when the cars come into the pits, just the number of people around them in the form of mechanics and other personnel just to make the pit stop and change the tires. I mean, when they're changing tires in 2 seconds, I mean, there is a lot of complex things happening in a very short amount of time, and it requires a large number of people to do so. And of course, obviously, the first thing that has to be taken into consideration is the safety of the pit crews and the people that are on the pit wall, because none of them, you know, I know that the pit crews are wearing some safety gear and stuff like that, but when you know you're a person and compared to a Formula One car going at well, not at full race speed, but going at a significant speed down the pit lane, you're not going to come off in a good way. And I mean, we've seen you know, mechanics get hurt before, either like the Jackman and the, well, we saw Kimi Raikkonen run over a guy's leg last year when he was at Ferrari. So I mean, things can happen, and those are just freak accidents that just happen in and around the car. So a collision that could happen in the pit lane because of an unsafe release. I mean, we were talking even just a little bit earlier about Verstappen's unsafe release at Monaco that forced Valtteri Bottas as close to the Armco barrier in the pit lane that I think you could get without actually touching it. So I think just from a safety point of view, I think it's an excellent thing that that they need to do, and I'm all for it. What if they decide it's going to be fines or whatever it is? I mean, they just need to have something in place, and I'm glad to see that that they've decided that time penalties are going to go out even if there is no competitive advantage gained for the car that is released ahead of them. It's just it's not good. It's dangerous. Put a stop to it, and I'm glad to see that it's happening. Anyways, we're just going to take one final break here. We're coming to the end of the show this week. There's a couple last things to talk about before we wrap it up, and we'll do so in just a moment, so don't go away. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back to the show. So just talking about some of the other teams in Formula One, we were just talking about McLaren before the break and how they want to have the distance or the gap between themselves and the top three teams in 2020. Frederic Vasseur, the team principal at Alfa Romeo, says that optimistic Alfa believe they can target McLaren after the summer break. And Alfa Romeo this year have been a little bit kind of disappointing. I expected to see a little bit more for them. They're currently 7th in the World Championship with 32 points, but I think that's due more to the fact that Kimi Raikkonen, at the grand old age of what is he now, 38, 39 years old, so far this year through the first dozen races has 8 top 10 finishes and 3 outside the points, compared to his teammate Antonio Giovinazzi, who only has 1 top 10 finish, and that was a 10th position at the Austrian Grand Prix, and he's only retired from 1 race, and that was in Great Britain. So Kimi scoring the majority of the points there so far, 31 points for him, his teammate contributing only a single point, but I would like to see them be able to run a little bit closer. I think that even though the results haven't been there, the points haven't been there, I mean, they've left a lot of points out on the track, I think that they've underperformed. I think that there's been hints that they're capable a little bit more. So Vasseur really believes that it's there. And he told motorsport.com, and I quote, "Consistency is important in the middle of the pack. I think McLaren is always there also, but I hope we are able to fight with McLaren in the second part of the season. We have to be consistent. We have to get the cars into the points every single weekend and try to do it with two cars. I think we can be optimistic. If you compare Barcelona, we were far away, and we've improved consistently from that stage of the season. We are pushing hard to bring updates, and we have to keep the same path for the last part of the season." So there you go. That's another situation to watch. And now this one I thought was an interesting quote, and this was from Charles Leclerc, who admits that Sebastian Vettel's doing what he says, quote, doing something better in the long runs. And Charles was referring specifically to the Hungarian Grand Prix, where they ran, sorry, the Hungarian Grand Prix, when they ran different strategies, and Sebastian went in for a late pit stop and put on softer compound tires, and was able to catch up and pass Charles with several laps from the end of the race. And by that time, he had the older, harder compound tires that were literally falling apart at that point. So Charles said to that, and I quote, "It was a difficult one in general. Obviously, I was struggling quite a lot with my rear tires from mid-race onwards. It was tires going off. We pitted quite early on the first stint, mostly because I was struggling with the tires. And then on the second stint towards the end, I've been struggling with tires again. So there's definitely something that Seb is doing better than me in the long runs where there's tire degradation." So obviously, and I think this is what and Charles is referring to here, is a driving style, and I think that's just an aspect of racecraft that that he can learn from his older, more experienced, multiple world champion and teammate Sebastian Vettel. And Seb, I think he doesn't get enough credit for the some of the results that he's had this year. I mean, obviously he hasn't won any races this year, but he's had 3 third place finishes, 3 second place finishes, and Hungary was very well played by Vettel. Obviously, they were not going to be able to contend for the win. That was always going to be between Hamilton and Max Verstappen. But I think it was very well played by Sebastian and his engineer to come up with a strategy that that they did, and it resulted in a podium for him. And and Charles, I think, is obviously seeing that there's a lesson to be learned from that, and will look to maybe adjust his driving style to get the longevity out of the tires, and maybe next time, rather than having the tires dead at the end of the race, maybe, or whatever the situation is, dead before he goes in for his pit stop, is able to extend and maximize the life and the grip that he has in a set of tires. So, talking about tires now, the FIA is sending Pirelli what they call a target letter, which is, well, actually, it's going to all the Formula One teams, and they're awaiting feedback before what's going to happen is they're going to say that the contents are frozen and signed off. So the items in the letter covers both 2020 and 2021. So the first year of the new era, which is going to also be the first year on the new 18-inch tires that are going to be a major part of the new rules and the future of Formula One. And so there are different things that could be modified, and Pirelli F1 boss Mario Isola has said that he has the target letter now, so he's said that they're happy to receive the comments as soon as possible to see if they can address some of the requests and get the process going, and so they can start working on what they're going to do for 2021. So some of the parameters that they're looking for in that time is tires that they're going to be low degradation, more resistant to overheating, and that will mean that drivers can push the tires and stuff like that. So I'm not really a big fan of these tires that degrade fairly quickly. So I would like to see a low degradation tire introduced into Formula One. So we'll see what shakes out in that over the next couple of months. And then this one we've already talked and hinted at it a couple of times here, just to refer to the German Grand Prix. And Mercedes has said that they will not intervene to keep Hockenheim on the Grand Prix calendar, or the German Grand Prix in general on the calendar for next year. And so far, it's the only race that is not going to be on the calendar for next year. And next year we're going to have two new races. Well, one's a completely new one, and that will be the Vietnamese Grand Prix. And the Dutch Grand Prix, not a new one, but Zandvoort's making a return to the Formula One calendar for the first time since, I think, the 1980s. So, I mean, next year we're going to have 22 races. So Hockenheim has a one-year deal in place with an option on Formula One side for 2020. But so far, it hasn't been snapped up by Liberty Media, and saying that Liberty has said that the fee that's involved is insufficient. So Toto Wolff has said that Mercedes is not going to intervene, and they've also said that previously that what with the teams agreeing to 22 races next year, that it's going to be pretty much the limit as to what they're capable of doing, and really going to stretch them to the limits logistically speaking. But it is kind of interesting that a number of races that would look like they were on the chopping block have slowly but surely sorted things out, like Silverstone, even the Mexican Grand Prix, which was looked like it was really hanging by a thread there, what with news that the fact coming out that it was heavily subsidized by government money to get the race there, that they surprisingly signed up. It also sounded like the Spanish Grand Prix was hanging by a thread, as was Monza, and some of those tracks would be disappointing to see go. I mean, it would be disappointing to see no Grand Prix in Germany, but honestly, I'd rather see it somewhere else. I don't really like Hockenheim all that much, not the new Hockenheim. I much prefer the Nürburgring, but whatever. It sounds like whatever happens, it's looking increasingly unlikely that there will be a German Grand Prix next year, and that's going to be a bit of a shame. And then just a couple of quick things here. Max Verstappen says that Honda's progress is testing Red Bull's durability. And certainly it's a completely different story that they've had with the Honda engines than they had with the Renault. And he says that the Honda's progress with the engine is allowing Red Bull to test the durability of its own parts and different parts of their car more so than they did with Renault. But I believe that there is more synergy, more teamwork between Honda and Red Bull than there was with Red Bull and Renault previously. Honda and Red Bull very much have a car and an engine that really integrate nicely together as one package, and it certainly seems that the approach that they're taking is working well so far. And then finally, Danny Kvyat has said that he 100% disagrees with Formula One's preseason testing reduction, and he says that he believes that the championship already has too little testing as it is. And I mean, I remember back in the day that it seemed like there was always so many tests, you know, preseason, midseason, and nowadays it's very, very minimal. And there's got to be a happy medium somewhere. I mean, I think the testing ban that was put in place was more due to the fact that some of the richer teams were able to spend more time testing and developing and gaining an advantage throughout the year compared to some of the other teams that maybe didn't have enough funds. But they have to be able to test and get things right. I mean, it's just in the benefit of everyone. So if they're dialing it back too much, certainly it's not a good thing. So we'll have to see whether or not Kvyat is the only one that that has that opinion, or if anybody else will weigh in on that one as well. Anyways, that's a good place to leave it right now for this week. Quite a bit of news to get through, quite a bit of discussion to be had. So it's all said and done for now. Thank you all very much for downloading and listening to the the show. If you want to do us a favor, the best way to support the show is just go over to Apple Podcasts and leave a 5-star rating or review, or wherever you listen and download your podcast from, and certainly we would greatly appreciate that. If you have any thoughts or comments or want to add anything to the discussion, please do so by sending us a tweet at @ScuderiaF1Pod or by sending us an email at ScuderiaF1Pod@gmail.com. That's it. That's a wrap. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you again this time next week. Ciao.
Thanks for listening to the Scuderia F1 podcast. If you want to get the show notes for this episode, then head over to ScuderiaF1Pod.com. Want to get in touch with us? Then email us at ScuderiaF1Pod@gmail.com.